All right. Health and Human Services Finance Committee will come to order. We do have a quorum. Do I have a motion to move the minutes for March 9th, 2017? Representative Albright moves the minutes for March 9th, 2017. Any additions or corrections? Seeing none, all those in favor of approving the minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The minutes are approved. Representative Hamilton will move House File 874 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Health and Human Services Omnibus Bill. We have the bill before us. I understand there's an A1 amendment. That's an author's amendment. Representative Hamilton moves the A1 amendment. Representative Hamilton, to your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. This was, the department did weigh in on this. This is an amendment that the department asked us to move forward, so I simply ask for your support.
All those in favor of adoption of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The A1 amendment is adopted. Representative Hamilton to 874 as amended.
All right. Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to thank everybody for being here today to show their support. Mr. Chairman, what this bill does, it is a bill that appropriates money for various housing services, including long-term homeless supportive services, housing with supports for adults with serious mental illness, transitional housing, and emergency services. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to turn it over to my testifier.
All right. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and members, my name is Senta Leff, and I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Coalition for the Homeless. I want to thank Representative Hamilton for carrying House File 874 and all the other members here today who are supporting the bill. I'm here representing the Homes for All Coalition, which is a coalition of more than 170 endorsing organizations from every legislative district in the state. Our coalition is made up of local governments, housing developers, and nonprofit service providers who work together to advance policy initiatives that strengthen Minnesota's full housing continuum. As you may know, today is our Homeless Day on the Hill, and we're welcoming more than 700 advocates from across the state, many of whom have driven great distances to be with us here today. And they're meeting with lawmakers from nearly every district in support of not only House File 874, but the full Homes for All 2017 agenda. So I want to highlight the impact the investments contained in this bill will have for constituents, not just in the urban centers in our state, but for rural communities as well. And before I do that, I just want to pause for a moment and highlight the fact that homelessness is not just an urban issue, right? And a lot of folks in rural communities don't see. It's a less visible problem in rural communities, and people sometimes ask me, is it true that there's homelessness in these rural parts of the state? And I just want to tell you, I've traveled all across the state, more than 3,000 miles, visiting providers who work in very rural communities, attempting to house folks. And when you live 100 or 200 miles away from an emergency shelter, you might tuck your child into a heated doghouse on someone's property. You might sleep in a fish house on a frozen lake. You might walk the aisles of a 24/7 Walmart. You might sneak into a hospital and look for an empty bed and hope that nobody opens the door that night. So let me just impress upon all of you that this is truly a statewide issue, and just because you don't live anywhere near an emergency shelter doesn't mean that your community is not experiencing homelessness. With that, I'll just call out the four programs that this investment would support. The first is the Emergency Services Program, which provides shelter and rural motel vouchers for those experiencing homelessness. We're requesting $500,000 investment. That, including BASE, would impact an estimated 14,000 individuals. The Transitional Housing Program that offers time-limited housing and services, a $1 million investment will impact nearly 1,000 households. The third is a program called Housing with Supports for Adults with Serious Mental Illness. It's a grant program to increase housing options for these adults, and a $3 million investment will impact over 4,000 individuals. Finally, the Long-Term Homeless Support Services Fund, which provides supportive housing to end homelessness for families and single adults. A $2 million investment will impact over 1,500 households. So as you can see, our request supports Minnesotans across the housing continuum, from emergency shelter to support services for those experiencing long-term homelessness. As a reminder, as we sit here today, more than 10,000 Minnesotans are experiencing homelessness. And I know everyone in this room can agree that that number is far too high, but it does reflect a 9% decrease from the last triennial homeless study conducted by Wilder Research in 2012. So in good news, as a state, Minnesota has made some unique progress toward ending homelessness. Other communities around the country have not seen the same kind of progress despite similar economic recoveries. And we've done this with targeted investments and service interventions which this bill will sustain and grow. So the bottom line is we're doing good work. Our request of this committee is to help us grow our efforts and reach a total of more than 21,000 Minnesotans in need. And because housing is a foundational issue that truly impacts everything else in our lives, I assure you there are few other more strategic investments we can make to build a Minnesota where everyone truly has a chance to thrive. So on behalf of our entire coalition and the hundreds of advocates who have joined together today, I want to thank again Representative Hamilton for carrying House File 874, and I greatly appreciate the committee's time and attention for this important matter. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Lepp. Appreciate your testimony today. Is there any other testifiers from the audience who'd like to testify? Seeing none, I think we'll open it up to member questions. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Hamilton. And it's nice to see you here before the committee. It seems like today has been a day of large group meetings in the Capitol, rally in the Capitol, which is awesome. We have the Best Life Alliance here today. We have a coalition supporting homes for people that don't have homes. There's a big group of students from Open World Learning Academy School in St. Paul here to talk about homelessness today. And we're at this place in the session, right? I feel like we don't talk about this enough, but we're at the point in the next week or so where the leadership of the House of Representatives are going to set targets. And those targets are going to tell us the story of what comes next. And Representative Hamilton is carrying an important piece of legislation here, and if we don't get a good enough target in this committee, we're not going to be able to do the things that we believe we should be doing for the people of Minnesota. So I am so happy you are here, and I am so happy that there are people here from across Minnesota to share your story here. But we need you to take the power that you have, the power that comes from the people of Minnesota, and make sure that the leadership of the House, the Speaker of the House, understands how important this is to the people of Minnesota. So Representative Dean gets a decent target, and he doesn't have to cut Health and Human Services, and so Representative Hamilton can get this piece of legislation funded. And I just don't think we talk about it enough in here, right? It is something that happens in a corner office. And so much of what you're lobbying for and what everybody in here is here for rests on that decision that's going to happen in that corner office. So it is important that you're here testifying so that we hear the story, so we can share the story, so we can help you build power and tell that story. But if we don't get a good enough number out of that corner, it's not going to matter. So please also direct your efforts in that direction as well, and help Representative Dean, help Representative Hamilton, and help us do what's right for Minnesota. Okay.
Thank Thank you, Representative Murphy. And speaking of the elephant in the room, there's probably not much room for an elephant in the room today. I understand we have room 181 is also filled. So we just try to make yourselves as comfortable as you can. I appreciate it. And if you can spread out a little bit. Representative Hamilton's other bill, 873, we will hear next. So if you're here for that bill, we're going to hear that bill next. So we'll try to get to that. Sometimes it does help if you can open the side doors if it gets a little extra toasty up there. Apologies for that. But it's a good sign that we've had a lot of interested folks here. You've filled up the entire building today, so that's very well indeed. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I was going to kind of comment on that as well and just maybe ask for a show of hands of how many of you are here for this bill, Homes for All, to support this bill? Wow, that is really great. Thank you all very much for being here. And it is really a great problem to have this room be really packed and to see the halls really packed with people who care about people who are homeless in Minnesota and people with disabilities in Minnesota. And I think that is what makes us a fabulous state. It makes me really proud to be a Minnesotan to see all of this interest and to see you all here. I don't so much have a question. I heard from a couple of advocates today in my office about this bill, a couple of personal stories about what this kind of support has meant for them. And we are at a time when often we have the business community coming to us and saying that they have trouble finding workers. And yet we have people who can't find homes who could be getting the services they need, who could be back on track to be productive members of society, who just need a little help to do that. And so I think it's really a demonstration of how interdependent we all are, how much we really depend on each other as a state. And I think that's part of our recipe for success as Minnesotans, is that we have paid attention to the people who need a little hand up to get back into the workforce and to be productive and to live happy, successful lives. So I'm very proud to see everybody here today. And like Representative Murphy, I just want to echo the issues that are before us this year, and really every year when we look at the great needs of people in Minnesota, how are we going to provide for those? So we have to think of our budget like a pie, because we in Minnesota can only spend so much money. We don't get to print money like the federal government. We have to only spend, we only can spend what the forecast is. And so think of it as a pie. So there is going to be one pie piece cut out for Health and Human Services, and out of that piece, Representative Dean is going to have to put together a budget, and he's going to have to make tough choices no matter what. But one of the things that may happen this year is one of those big pieces is going to be for tax cuts for wealthy Minnesotans, probably a lot of it. And any of that that goes to other places like that cannot go into Health and Human Services. So those are the choices before us. And as we consider very important issues like this one, keep in mind that there are real trade-offs that have to be made, and those are choices that are being made, not always in this committee, but nevertheless every member has to decide what their priorities are going to be. And thank you very much, Representative Hamilton, for bringing this bill and for a lot of the great legislation that you've been bringing, because I know that you are sincerely committed to moving some of these issues forward. Thank you.
Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think my colleagues said really great things about what we're facing as a committee this year. And every year, every biennium, this committee makes really hard and difficult choices. But we also have, I think, made a lot of promises and given a lot of hope to the people of Minnesota, because they come to us with such important pieces of legislation, and this is one of them. When I look at the dollar amounts, when we talk about this in context of the entire state budget, $1 million for long-term homeless supportive services and $1.5 million a year for supportive services for adults with serious mental illnesses, that seems like a pretty amazing bang for the buck. when we know that without these services, we are looking at additional costs to health care through uncompensated care or hospitalizations because people aren't able to have their mental health treated, or people who are in some way criminalized for being homeless through trespassing or whatever it may be. And I can't imagine what it would cost to book and house and try somebody who is homeless because they were on property that they weren't supposed to be on. I think that your examples about finding a doghouse in somebody's yard or a fish house are all ways that people could be criminalized for being homeless when they're trying to just find a place for their child to sleep. Mm-hmm. And to keep their families intact, that's a huge part of keeping families intact. Mm-hmm. They might be sleeping on couches or, in their cars to try to keep their families together. And we know that our children need their parents before anything else. And so this kind of stability seems like a big bang for the buck. And I guess my question to Ms. Leff is, are there some analyses that you could share with us about what this saves in terms of this type of investment saves in other parts of our state budget? Is there a return on investment?
There certainly is. I'm sorry.
Ms. Leff, all right.
Mr. Chair, thank you. There are multiple studies, both on a national level and at a local level, most recently published by Wilder Research, and I'd be happy to provide the chair and all committee members with copies of those studies, return on investment studies. The most recent that I've seen represents a return for every dollar generates an additional $1.44 back to the state. Criticism of that study is that it's been perhaps a little too conservative. Anecdotally, what I might share, and which I think echoes some of the comments that you've made, that many of you have already made, is that, you know, you can put all the money in the world into education, into public safety, you name it. But if people don't have a place to live, we simply can't expect them to succeed. And when we think about a return on our investments, I want to remind the committee that the vast majority of people experiencing homelessness in the state of Minnesota are children. Over half of them are kids, and over half of those kids are under the age of 5. In fact, the average age of a homeless person in the state of Minnesota is 8 years old. So I'm not sure how we can expect kids to do well in school, go on to college, get a good job, and become productive members of society when their parents are tucking them into a heated doghouse somewhere in rural Minnesota.
Representative Lunin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, a question to the testifier. In this endeavor, this is a very, very important problem, and this is a problem that's recognized on both sides of the aisle.
Indeed.
We have realities, but in some of the solutions, is there participation at the private level as far as companies, whatever, coming in and playing a role in helping out with some of this?
Ms. Leff.
Mr. Chair. Representative, yes, I wish I had in front of me right now the exact data, and again, I'm happy to get back to you at another point in time. Some of our other Homes for All materials talk about the ways in which these public dollars leverage private dollars, and I'm sorry, I don't have the number off the top of my head, but I'd be happy to get it to you.
Representative Lunin.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And I wanted that point. I asked a question I already knew the answer to, because I'm familiar with many corporations that are fully aware of what a dramatic problem this is and how important it is to create an environment in homelessness where we create a trampoline rather than a hamlock. And anyone that can clean that fish can solve that problem. We're all looking for it. The process we have to go through is more than what was brought up earlier with targets or budgets, but we also have to make sure that we're spending effectively. And I think everyone at this table, there's great resources. I have a lot of respect for on that side of the table that I hope we can work with. on taking a look at reallocation. I had people stop by my office today up on the fifth floor demonstrating their frustration with the experience with some of the departments, and like there was a deaf ear to some of these ultimate problems, these real problems that people are involved in. The going through working together on making sure we're spending effectively, I think it would go once the targets come out and we see how big a piece of pie we have, making sure that we are getting as much actually done as we possibly can, which means we have to go back and revisit some of the places we not only currently are spending money on, but maybe in have a long-term history of spending money on, deciding, is this the most effective use of that dollar? Because we only have a finite amount, and situations like this call for solutions. In the Republican caucus, we've talked about this I've been in for 3 years now, and I've heard it all 3 years. And there are people just very, very passionate. Some of those people are at this table right now. And so let's make sure we're all grabbing onto the same end of the rope, trying to get the same objective. Thank you.
Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Hamilton, for bringing this forward. Just a couple comments about myself for the people in the room. I spent 13 years in jail ministry. Not in jail, but in jail ministry. I constantly have to clarify that. But and I also was 15 years or 16 years on the school, our local school board. And I got involved with a number of homeless situations, which is extremely sad and depressing. I'll be the first to admit that. But I spent a lot of my life on a voluntary basis trying to help people who are in worse circumstances than I find myself, or in sometimes desperate circumstances. But a couple things to understand that I would just add to the conversation is that, you know, one of the studies that's out there, and the Minnesota Family Council has a copy of it, is that if government programs simply reinforce traditional families, 90% of children would be raised out of poverty. And what I mean by that is most of the government programs, for whatever reason, tend to penalize traditional marriage and undermine the stability of the family. And what we all have to understand is that when we allow government to do that, there is a huge price to pay culturally for that. And again, you can find the study of Minnesota Family Council. The other thing I would add is this. It's the private sector, and we've got a wonderful private sector in Minnesota, that generates the billions of dollars that allow us to do the things we do to help people, whether it's a nursing home or homeless or people in dire situations, disabled, medical assistance. But they generate the tax dollars that allow us to do these things. And when a state in a global economy and national economy has very high taxes and very high regulations, it actually stifles, and I would say unreasonable taxes at times, and unreasonable regulations, it actually stifles private sector growth, and the result is we have fewer tax dollars to meet the needs of the people of the state of Minnesota that really need that help. So now you'd say, well, that's just your opinion, Glenn. Well, Minnesota Management Budget, which is an agency in the state of Minnesota here, came out with an analysis in April of 2015 that actually showed that lower taxes create higher tax revenues. Okay? So one of the things we have to do as a state is become competitive so that, like in my district, where we had a business that once employed 3,000 people, private business, most of their production has now moved out of state, and with it, millions and millions of tax revenue with it. And they've moved to states with more reasonable regulations, and actually out of the country with more reasonable regulations and lower taxes. So constantly raising taxes and increasing regulations can actually reduce tax revenues and gives us less assets to be able to meet the needs of the people who really need it. Thank you.
Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. very much want to thank Representative Hamilton for bringing the bill forward. This is very important, and one of the things I want to mention is that, you know, while we see these dollars that are listed in the bill here, one of the things that is very clear in my mind is that a number of the organizations that will be using this money going forward, a lot of them are able to leverage this by getting support from within the local communities, etc. And where I can demonstrate that very clearly is when the Homeless Youth Act went through and had the large increase that they had there, is allowed our organization serving homeless youth to be able to do an expansion up into Brooklyn Park that was matched quite greatly by the local communities and people within the local communities. But it was not able to make that all to come together without that additional funding from the state government. It takes a partnership for it to occur. And one of the other things I'll mention is, you know, we get into concerns about tax cuts and how much people are being taxed, but I've looked over the years and the decades here in our country and how the tax rates at the very top of our scale in our country have gone down for years and decades now, but at the same time, the promised growth in revenue hasn't seemed to accomplish it at the same time. Sometimes I think there needs to be a reasonableness to take a look at where the tax rates are and where the needs in our community are. We're taking a look today at addressing not just what's happening in the homeless community right now, but addressing the needs of, very shortly in another bill, of those who are taking care of the most vulnerable in our society. And one of the things that I think is frustrating is when I look at a society, you can determine how good a society is, I think, by how well it takes care of those who are the most vulnerable and who are the most at risk in our communities, and also those who support them. And right now, we aren't always able to support them with a living wage, which kind of goes to the next bill, but more importantly, also kind of impacts here, is because some of the money that comes in here goes to organizations that allow their people to try to pay a living wage. And a lot of times, a number of these organizations they can't go out and raise prices like private businesses can. They have to try to rely on raising contributions, or more often than not, some of these organizations are just getting their revenues from the government, and so when the government doesn't provide the additional resources, that means the people doing this critical work, supporting our people who are at risk, who are vulnerable, are sometimes living on substandard and wages that are less than the living wage, and we have to keep that in mind why we have to make sure that we're providing adequate funding.
Final thoughts, Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you to the committee for your thoughtful discussion. I want to give a shout-out. I think that's my buddy, is that Coffee John up there? Hey, thank you for being here. And, again, a very very important issue. I want to give a shout-out to my mom, who was a single parent, who did a wonderful job raising my sister and I. So thank you, Mom, for that as well. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I would simply ask for your support.
All right, so the committee gives a shout-out to Ma Hamilton and our thanks as well. And with that, House File 874, as amended, is laid over for possible inclusion of Health and Human Services Omnibus Bill. All right, next up we have House File 873. Representative Hamilton moves 873 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Health and Human Services Omnibus Bill. We have the A1 amendment before us. Representative Hamilton moves the A1 amendment. All those in favor of adoption of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
As opposed, no. The A1 amendment is adopted. And Representative Hamilton, I'm going to ask you to present your bill as amended. Before I do that, what I would like to do is also remind members that we do have several bills on the agenda today. We would like to get through all of them. We don't have any rooms reserved for this evening, so please take that into consideration. Please also take into consideration that folks have traveled distances to testify in these bills, so we do want to move things along as quickly as possible.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. We went through the A1 real quickly, didn't really get a chance to look at it. I know that there is at least one person who wanted to testify about it.
Testify on the A1? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Move for reconsideration of the A1 amendment.
Thank you,
Chair. The A1 amendment is before us. Discussion of the A1 amendment. I'm sorry, Representative Murphy,
no,
I didn't realize that.
I know.
All right. Is there anyone that would like to testify on the A1 amendment?
Hey, buddy. Nice to meet you.
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
All right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee members, for the record, my name is Ethan Vogel, legislative representative for AFSCME Council 5. I'd like to start by thanking Representative Hamilton for carrying this bill and for all the advocates here today. Really appreciate your support. AFSCME Council 5 represents direct care workers who are county employees. And it's not very common. I think we only have two counties where this is the case. This bill, in its original form, increases funding to counties who employ direct care workers. And in the current version, it requires the counties to discuss and come to an agreement with the union on how to spend that additional funding. This amendment, though, maintains the funding increases for the counties, but it removes the requirement that they pass any of that additional funding on to the direct care workers. And so, in essence, it allows the county to take the additional funding and supplant the current funding that they're required to or that they've dedicated to this person for this purpose, and that's something that we are opposed to.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Vogel.
And if we're reconsidering this, could we have a roll call, please?
Roll call has been requested for the amendment. There will be a roll call. Representative Hamilton.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And, you know, I want to bring the counties up here as well, because the whole purpose of this is what I'm trying to do is get the dollars to the direct care workers. And if this isn't the amendment that does, is this the amendment that does that?
This should be just the amendment that does the county case managers. This should be the county or the CFPB.
All right. So, I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. You want to speak to the amendment?
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Rochelle Weston, and I'm with the Association of Minnesota Counties. The intent of this amendment and what we worked out with the best lines yesterday, and if Mr. Goodnow's in the room, he can correct me if I'm wrong, really focuses on targeting out case management only. So it would be the county case managers who would be exempt from the mandatory COLA increase. This doesn't take away the money from the disability services area. It still goes into that waivered services. This money can't be used for transportation or something like that in counties. It has to go to the services that are provided. So the counties serve then as more of a pass-through rather than the money going into nowhere. County case managers started around $35,000, and other county caseworkers in those fields go up to $92,000. They're not the direct workers that we're looking for on this bill. The intent of this amendment were to exclude county case managers, but from my understanding with what we discussed yesterday, would this still include the DTNH and the ICFDD, which are the only two facilities in Minnesota where county workers are employed to provide direct care and services. And there's one in Ramsey County and one in Scott County, and those are the only two left.
Thank you, Ms. Fierson. If I could ask Mr. Goodnow to, since he's already there, to just, if you wouldn't mind, introducing yourself for the record, and then also if you could just break down the differentiation between those two. Thank you.
Say it.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Kevin Goodhill, I am here on behalf of the Best Life Alliance and also represent the organization called MORE that represents state training and rehabilitation providers. This amendment doesn't do what we discussed in Representative Hamilton's office yesterday. It does exclude. So there are two county facilities that are direct care facilities. One is an ICFDD in Ramsey County, and another is a DTNH in Scott County. This would remove the requirement that the increase be passed on to the Scott County facility. Those workers in Scott County. That's not taken care of.
So, Mr. Chairman, Representative Hamilton, what would you recommend?
Mr. Chairman, if I move this amendment, I would like to withdraw that. This was not what we had agreed upon in the office yesterday.
Thank you. Representative Hamilton removes the that's quite all right, Representative Hamilton. Representative Hamilton removes the A1 amendment, and I'm sure the interested parties will continue to work on this as the bill moves forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can we go to the testimony?
Let's do that. Representative Hamilton, testifiers.
Ethan.
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself on the record and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Pam Ganella, and I am the chair of the Best Life Alliance. I am asking you today to vote in favor of House File 873. Right now we are, I just want to introduce, this is my daughter, Sarah. She was at the rally this morning. I think she needs a nap now. We are facing an unprecedented workforce crisis in community-based services for people with disabilities in all parts of the state of Minnesota. The legislation before you today proposes better compensation for direct care workers. These direct care workers are critical to the quality of care in Minnesota for people with disabilities like my daughter, Sarah. Sarah was not born with a disability. When she was 5 years old, she suffered severe brain damage from a viral infection. She can no longer speak, and she must be fed, dressed, bathed, and diapered. She can still walk, but she's partially blind, and she's not able to protect herself from dangers. She also has a continuing seizure disorder, and she falls without warning, which is why she has to wear a helmet. Even though she's a little sleepy now, despite these disabilities, Sarah's really an amazingly happy and loving person, and she's now 34 years old. I cared for her at home for 25 years with the help of direct care workers that came into our house, and I could not have been able to do that for 25 years without their help. 4 years ago, we moved her to an intermediate care facility where she lives with five other people with severe disabilities. At first, we noticed some turnover in staff at Sarah's house, but in the last 2 years, the staff turnover has increased dramatically. Now, instead of three staff each shift, there are only two. Two staff is the minimum for the six residents that the house can have and maintain its licensing. Currently, the nonprofit that operates Sarah's house has a staff turnover rate of 38%. Now, that may seem high, but there are many other providers in the state of Minnesota that have even higher turnover rates than that. These turnover rates and job vacancies are having an enormous effect on the quality of community services for people with disabilities in our state. Direct care staff at her house used to take Sarah into the community. She would go shopping or go to the movies. This rarely happens anymore. The only time Sarah is really included in her community is when her dad and I take her in with us, like today. Her house staff is forced to focus on basic health and safety care and have little time to facilitate inclusion in the community. Without adequate staffing, the inclusion in the community and the community involvement that are envisioned by Minnesota's Olmstead Plan are not going to be able to be achieved because we don't have the staff to help with that. These staff shortages also burn out the existing staff. The number of overtime hours that staff are asked to work is growing. Staff that already work full-time are asked to work overtime to fill empty shifts. This only accelerates the burnout and the turnover. This situation really just can't continue. Sarah and her housemates, along with thousands of other people with disabilities across the state, can't wait any longer. The staff must have wages that recognize the difficult and really essential work that they do every single day. The health and safety of our children cannot be put at risk. Individuals needing disability services experience this workforce crisis every single day. We as parents and family members see this crisis every time we go to the group homes and the day programs that care for our children. We see the rapid changes in staff and we worry. What does this mean for the future of our children? What might happen if there was no longer staff enough to keep open the group homes and day programs. Will parents who are trying to take care of their child at home the way we did not be able to do that because they can't find staff that would come into their homes? The same is true for adults who are endeavoring to live independently. They need the staff, and they require that staff, or their home alone, which is really dangerous for many people. We are worrying about whether the health and safety of our kids is going to be at risk. If this workforce crisis goes unaddressed, what will that mean for our children? And when they really want to be in the community, part of the community, right now we need to invest in these essential services for Sarah and all of the other people with disabilities in Minnesota that really depend on them every day. I thank you for your attention, and I ask for your support for this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Ganella. We appreciate it. And Representative Considine has a question for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And no, I don't have a question. 4% on $11 an hour is 44 cents an hour. That's $12-$13 a week, somewhere between 40 and 50 a month. This bill does not address the problem and will not fix it. It is terribly and woefully inadequate. Now, I have another bill that will be coming up. I hope it will get a hearing, but it starts at 10% and 5%. We have a $1.65 billion surplus. If we're not going to address this problem in a meaningful way at a point when we have this kind of surplus, I don't see it happening. And quite frankly, if last year's history is repeated, where we were told it was passed and the money was allocated, we're just exasperating the problem and giving people hope when there really isn't any. 4% and 4% are just not enough to make a difference in the workforce shortages, and we need to go forward in a more meaningful way. I hope I will get a hearing on my bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I understand that we have a jam-packed agenda, but this is really vitally important. So I really feel the need to amplify the voices of the workers and the families that have come here today to give their testimony. And I want to thank the Ganellas. Pam is a constituent of mine. I've been invited into their home on numerous occasions to learn more about their family and other families in our communities that are experiencing struggles because of the low reimbursement rates. And Pam has just done an amazing job being a voice for the community, and your representative hears you. And thanks, Sarah. And she's absolutely right. Sarah is absolutely delightful, and Sarah, I could so use a nap with you. So, but I want to say that Ms. Ganella touched on a few things about dignity and quality of life and basic health and safety that we are going to ignore if we get a cut target in HHS. We have been talking about this issue my entire career here at the legislature, which isn't long, but it's long enough when we talk about the kind of staff turnover we're looking for. When I have to hear stories about people who are getting bed sores because they can't get out of bed because their caregiver doesn't arrive, or because they don't have the staffing that they need, that's a cost. It's a huge cost to our system. And it's a huge dismissal of human dignity if we turn our backs on these needs. And I tell you, I'm passionate about this because I did this work. And so for all the workers in this room, I've been with you. I've been on that side as a caregiver. And the family that I did caregiving for, I spent holiday dinners with before I would start my shift. You're part of the family. And continuity of care is so vitally important. The Ganellas are spending every day trusting other people to care for their daughter who is vulnerable. And to not just care for her in a basic way, but to give her a quality of life that supports her dignity, that supports
her happiness as a human being. That's what we're talking about here. And the fact is we have not funded this to a level where we can ensure that continuity of care, that we can ensure that we have the best caregivers available for the most vulnerable people in our society. And so I really, really encourage members, I encourage the public to make sure that their voices are being heard, that we don't see another cut target in HHS. That's all I've seen since I've been a legislature. I don't know any different than cutting HHS. And because of those cut targets, we keep kicking the can down the road on issues that are this vital. And it's getting more important every single day. And so I really want to say that we hear you, and we really want you to make sure that these priorities are on par with the other budget priorities that we're going to be talking about this legislative session.
So, Representative Franzen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a reminder to the body, you know, yes, we have had a cut target to HHS, including 2013 and 2014 when we had to cut our target in HHS with over a $2 billion deficit. With that, ladies and gentlemen, I happen to have the honor of being neighbors with two home-based community homes. One is right next to me. My right next door to me is my neighbor. Two homes down is another home. And I have the joy of being able to see these individuals each and every day when they're outside for their walks or leaving for their activities outside of their home. And over the 14-year totals from 2003 to 2016, there has been an 8.94% increase in this area, which averages to be about 0.64%, which I find is appalling. There is not enough staff to go around for these homes to keep the client safe. Now when there is a mental health crisis or some other crisis in that home, there's not even staff to call into these homes, and they're having to rely on outside resources, which can cost thousands of dollars per individual. There's not as many qualified individuals coming into the home to take care of these children. They are somebody's children, so moms and dads are concerned about the welfare of their children. There's increased complaints from parents because the care has disintegrated over the years because individuals are overworked and becoming rather impatient with the long hours they're having to work during a pay period. And also the increased staff turnover due to the lack of pay for these individuals. You know what, when you think about being comfortable with somebody, can you imagine needing to be dressed, having to be dressed, helping with showering, daily activities, and having to get comfortable with new staff every few months. I can't even imagine. And we have parents here that are begging and pleading for an increase so that their children can have a semblance of a normal life, of quality life, of a life that is stable. And homes closing down. There was a home that closed down in Alexandria in October, and finding placement for these individuals as well was heartbreaking. Another lady in Alexandria, she moved to a different job, and her daughter told me, she said, Mom is, you know, she's home more often now with me, and all this is having to do is she left her job because she couldn't handle the long hours anymore. And we really need to make these individuals a priority this session. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Franzen, Representative Loeffler, and then we're going to move on to the next bill. Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to our testifier. The people who do this work are truly lifesavers, and they do that in a literal sense in terms of some of them are suctioning people who are ventilator-dependent. They are making sure that they get their medications on time, and they notice when there are changes in their condition that might need be signs of an emerging issue. But more importantly, they save the most important parts of life, which is someone who
you recognize and know. And when you get home after a day program or a day at work, there's someone who you actually recognize and who knows you, who knows how to make you smile and laugh, and who knows how you like to be bathed, and who can make you feel safe and comfortable, because it's not a new stranger every week, every few weeks, every month. And it's important work, and I'm just embarrassed for us as a society that we pay so little. It's disproportionately women's work, work of minorities, and it has been historically underpaid, and we're going to have to make some big leaps. But we as a committee have seen some, we've been hearing this is a crisis for a long time. Representative Halverson's right that we've been hearing about this for years. But now we have proof that it's actually, the system is cracking apart. Our health department is able to investigate 10% of the public complaints of abuse, maltreatment, neglect, or other serious problems. They look at only 1% of the self-reported problems where the providers say something happened, the untrained staff person didn't know what they were doing. This includes not just home and community-based services, but the data is also nursing homes, assisted living, other places as well, the data. But it says we're in a crisis. When 3 days a week, three times a day, someone has a medication error, that can be life-threatening. And we need to treat this as the serious crisis it is. We are now under court order, under the Olmstead settlement, because we have been denying people's rights to live in the most independent, integrated setting possible. That means we're going to need more people stepping up and do this important work. And I think it's upon all of us who serve on this committee to raise this issue outside of this committee to the highest levels of leadership, and to the press and the public, to realize that this is going to destroy the common community-based service system that Minnesota had for years taken pride in. But now too many people are giving up. They're just worn out from trying to juggle the unfilled shifts, and they're putting people into higher need, higher expense situations than they would just because they have to be able to manage and know that the safety of the care is going to be there. And I didn't sign on to this bill because I feel it's too little, and I feel like we need to step up and really raise this to the level of crisis awareness that it deserves, because people's lives are at stake, and I appreciate everyone who's hung in there in this profession and in serving these people and their needs.
Thank you, Representative Loeffler. Would anyone from the audience like to testify on behalf of this bill? Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony. Get a chair for the testifier, please. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
I tend to cry a lot, so, but I usually get through it.
All right. Welcome to the committee. Just say who you are and where you're from, and give us your testimony very briefly. Thank you.
My name is Jerry Haley, and I'm from Stillwater, Minnesota. Can you all hear me?
Yep.
And Representative Kathy Romer is my representative, and I have a son with three disabilities, Williams syndrome, autism, and sensory integration problem, and I'm a retired accounting teacher, and taking care of Luke has been really, really tough. But because we received services from the state, Luke is a breeze to take care of now. But we depend on two caregivers. They're both moms, and they're great. And but when they go on vacation, or their sons and daughters get sick, or they get sick, or their husband gets sick, or whatever. Like in February, I didn't have any services at all, so I took care of my son. And I used to play football, and I have a lot of football injuries, and it's harder and harder for me to get him out of the tub. I'm 71 years old. He's 29. And because I'm an accounting instructor, as I understand, this bill would cost as I understand, the bill would cost $100 million. And I divided this by the population of Minnesota, which is 5,519,952, and I got $18.11 per person. I know there's a $1.65 billion surplus, and I divided that by the number of households there are in Minnesota, which are 2,124,745, and I got $776.56. And this bill of $18.11 could easily be paid for in that way. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Haley. We appreciate it. If you can just check in with the page, we can get your name for the minutes. Anyone else like testifying on behalf of the bill? Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Yeah, my name is Star Amaradian. I've worked in this industry for about 7 years. I hear everybody's passion, compassion, but still nobody's giving a solution. Nobody's telling us because I still work in this industry. Somebody like Sarah over there, if she had a voice to tell you right now when she get home, maybe she want to go to the park. Maybe she want to go somewhere. But she can't do it because there's not enough staff. And the reason there's not enough staff is because there's not enough pay. It's a turnover. Keep going. So what we want to hear is when you is cut. Now you have a surplus. There's no reason for you to give Sarah the last that she wants. And in my house right now, I have clients like Sarah who wants to do something. Please, enough talking. Enough talking. The gentleman over there was talking about tax cuts. You can tax all the cuts. You can cut all the tax you want to. It's not going to give Sarah all the, you know, the last that she wants. We understand you want to give it for the businesses tax cut. When you give it for them, where they're going, they're going to move anyway. Please, do Sarah a life that she deserves. 25 years. If it wasn't her parents, she wouldn't go nowhere. In my house, it's the same thing. I have a client that went to the hospital 2 weeks ago. And she, you know, we went where she went for critical care. The hourly pay over there is about $18 an hour and above. But where she left, where he was taken care of every day, it's about $11. Something is wrong.
That's the reporters.
Oh, okay. All right. My name is Liz McCambridge. This is my ninth arm day. One of my three sisters is sitting in that wheelchair right over there. Hi, Gina. I have three sisters who live in a group home. All are severely mentally retarded and cerebral palsied, confined to wheelchairs. The turnover rate is much greater than even every 3 months. It's like every 3 weeks. It's terrible. I'm a little concerned. I love the idea of 10% this year and 5% next year, but please, we need something now. Maybe you can work it out that if you get a hearing on your bill, then it will take over for this bill. But we need something now. My sister would love to go to church once a month. That isn't happening. Once a month. And you've heard it all from everybody else, but please pass this, get this moving today. And once those people make that extra 44 cents an hour, they'll pay more taxes. Thank you, Texas. There are 80,000 There are 80,000 people employed in the HCBS services. That's more than all of Mayo Clinic and Target employees combined. That's more than that. And we have 8,700 positions unfilled, and the supervisors are working weekends, and they're working 60 hours a week. They don't get to see their families. The burnout is not just with the DSPs, it's with the supervisors and the managers as well. This is collapsing. And with the Medicaid cuts coming down, possibly, I hope not, but possibly, the Medicaid cuts are going to affect my sisters dramatically. I don't know if you want to send them back to Cambridge State School and Hospital, where they spent 31 years before they got into Phoenix. I love Phoenix, and I love all the DSPs who take care of my sisters. Thank you very, very much.
Representative Hamilton, final thoughts?
Chairman, I thank everybody for the thoughtful discussion, and I ask for your support.
Thank you, Representative Hamilton. With that, 873 is laid over for possible inclusion. Next up, we have House File 1176.
Is that me again? Yeah.
Representative Hamilton moves House File 1176 be included for possible inclusion in the Health and Human Services Omnibus Bill. We have the bill before us. Please, as folks, as you leave, please could you keep your voices down as we leave, because we are continuing the committee. So if you could please quietly, if you're going to get up and leave, that's great. If you're going to stick around, that's great. But we do need to continue the meeting. We do have a lot to do. Please, Representative Hamilton, to your bill.
Mr. Chairman, I'll turn it over to the testifier at this time.
Do you have an amendment, Representative Hamilton?
The A3 amendment?
No, I guess we don't have an amendment. Representative Hamilton, to your bill.
Mr. Chairman, I'd ask the testifier.
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record. We'll proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Elizabeth Fleming. I'm a fourth-year student in the doctoral psychology program at St. Mary's University of Minnesota. I thank you very much for the opportunity to speak to House File 1176. It is my experience that the level of reimbursement for mental health services must be increased to effectively provide care to those with medical assistance. However, I want to specifically speak to the part of this bill that proposes to equalize reimbursement between master's and doctoral level providers. I'd briefly like to tell you about my background. After being diagnosed with type 1 diabetes as a child, I knew that I wanted to make a career out of one in which I could help people work through their own experience of living with an invisible disability. For me, this meant receiving a master's degree in counseling psychology and beginning to work in a community mental health setting. After completing the 700 hours of required master's level supervised training, I realized how much I had yet to learn about mental health and the world of psychology, and decided to continue my training in a doctorate program. After 4 years in the program, 1,331 hours of supervised doctoral level training, and my full-time work as a senior forensic psychometrist, I now feel like I have a solid foundation on which I can base my work as a psychologist. In addition to the required 2,000-hour internship training experience, the expertise of a psychologist is really developed by the extra 3 to 4 years of full-time coursework and the minimum of 1,200 hours of supervised training post-master's degree. So that's 1,200 hours beyond the 700 hours that master's level providers are required to have. These training experiences are just some of what set doctoral level providers apart from master's level providers. Given these differences, it's important that the reimbursement directly correlate with the level of services provided. Similar to the vast differences in the type of work of physicians and RNs, doctoral level psychologists provide clients with a higher level of specialized care and should be reimbursed accordingly. This bill proposes to equalize pay for master's and doctoral level providers, essentially raising rates 30% for master's providers, 20% for psychiatric services, and 10% for doctoral psychologists. Should this bill be accepted as is, the incentive to pursue doctoral level training may diminish and the workforce will suffer. In order to provide students with an incentive to pursue further education and to develop specific expertise, it is vital that the reimbursement be commensurate with the level of training received. Please keep the differential between master's and doctoral level providers to incentivize students to complete a higher level of training and to provide Minnesotans with the option of receiving specialized care. And I thank you for your time, and I would be happy to answer any questions you might have. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Representative Hamilton.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move the A2 amendment. It's a technical amendment from the department.
All right. Thank you, Representative Hamilton. Representative Hamilton moves the A2 amendment. Discussion of the A2 amendment. Seeing no discussion, all those in favor of adoption of the A2 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The A2 amendment is adopted. Representative Hamilton, to your bill is amended.
We stand for questions.
All right. Questions? Seeing none, does anyone from the audience want to testify on this bill? All right, seeing none. All those in favor, I'm sorry, Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just, I wanted to, I know we heard this bill also in the policy committee, and I remember the young lady's testimony. I'm sorry, what was your name?
My name is Elizabeth Fleming, but Kristen Johnson was the one previously.
Oh, okay. So I just wondered, because the bill, as I'm understanding it, erases the difference. And she's saying, don't erase the difference, because then you're not encouraging people to get the higher training, which is obviously very extensive and probably expensive as well. And so I just wanted to know if Representative Hamilton would kind of respond to that. I know he's distracted right now.
No, keep going.
You got to, you can listen and talk at once.
Do you want to comment on that?
Anyway, I just really wanted to hear what the response is to that, because it is concerning, and I know that, you know, they've taken the effort to come here and explain that to us, and, you know, I certainly have a lot of respect for the expertise involved in this work, and I don't want to, I know that a lot of people are paying a lot of money and putting, you know, not only out of their pocket, but the opportunity cost loss to go back and get that schooling, and I am concerned about what we might be doing here by erasing the differential, and I'd like to hear the response to that.
Welcome to the committee, Ms. Regan. Please introduce yourself and answer the question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mary Regan, Executive Director of Aspire Minnesota. This is really a bill that was developed in collaboration with all kinds of groups of providers of mental health services. It's endorsed by the Mental Health Legislative Network. And the intent is not to penalize folks who have gone on to their PhD, but rather to recognize that most of the services that are being provided in mental health settings are provided by people who are at the top of their license. And in social work, in marriage and family therapy, in licensed professional clinical counseling, that is considered by those boards to be the master's level. It's only the psychology board that requires their folks to go on to be PhDs. Psychologists certainly do, because of that, have to get more training, have to pay more money for more education, and also are able to do some things that none of the other mental health professionals are licensed to do. But to have a 20% cutback is very challenging for providers across the state who are trying to provide mental health services to all kinds of communities. And so that's really what this small section of the bill is trying to address.
Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, I mean, you're calling it a cutback, but it isn't a cutback, because current law just simply pays less for those folks than are paid to, as it says here in the current language, to doctoral prepared professionals. And I guess I, you know, maybe I'm missing something here, but I'm kind of with her. It doesn't seem to me it makes a lot of sense to do this, frankly. I mean, I get that rates might be too low across the board. That's a different issue. But I don't know that we're, you know, maybe this is just a backdoor way to raise rates. That's probably what it is. But it does not make sense to me to erase that differential.
All right. Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wondering, is there a fiscal note on the bill? Maybe I missed that. My apologies if so.
Doug?
Mr. Chair, Representative Pinto, it's pending. The agency did not get it done in time. It'll be distributed to the members as soon as it's ready.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Good. All right. Other discussion?
Mr. Chair, if I could, the section that's been talked about is only one small section of this bill. There's another section that we think is very important as well, and that would set the floor for PMAPs, for the Managed Care Medical Assistance Organizations, at the fee-for-service rate, which is the published rate that DHS has for medical assistance. In the policy committee, you heard testimony from providers who've been really struggling with significant reductions from the published rate. And as you indicated, Representative Liebling, that is already a pretty low rate. The other piece of the bill would actually give a 10% increase to all mental health services and a 20% increase for psychiatry services, again, to address the significant demand for mental health services and the problems that providers are having around the state recruiting and paying and providing those services.
So, Mr. Chair.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you. I don't want to belabor this. I know we are on short time frames, but it's really interesting that in that last paragraph of the bill, you're putting in a differential for somebody who has more training, namely a psychiatrist, over other mental health services. And then in this first section of the bill, you're getting rid of that differential. And I would support the second part, the paragraphs E and F, but I'm not going to vote for the bill right now because of that paragraph. If we're voting on this bill, maybe we're just laying it over. But I would not support that differential. I hope we can separate that out.
And Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hamilton.
Mr. Chairman, I'm happy to work on this either this year or over the interim if this is a big issue on this, but I'm more than happy to work with all the stakeholders.
Thank you, Representative Hamilton. All right. With that, House File 1176 is laid over for possible inclusion in the Health and Human Services Omnibus Bill. Thank you, Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
As amended. Representative Hamilton, do you mind if we do Representative Franzen's bill first and come back to this one? Thanks. Representative Franzen, House File 1350.
Yeah, I know that this is.
Representative Franzen moves House File 1350 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Health and Human Services Omnibus Bill. We have the bill before us. Representative Franzen, to your bill.
Hello, members. I have another great bill from the city that is easy to get to and hard to leave, Alexandria. Spend-down issues are nothing new to this committee, but the problems are not limited to just medical care in the traditional sense. Those individuals need dental care, too, and because of complex billing challenges, those folks have a great deal of difficulty finding dental providers willing to provide service. Health File 1350 provides some relief for providers who serve the MA patients and was brought to me by Caring Hands Dental Clinic in Alexandria. They serve 38 counties in greater Minnesota, and their mission is to help those patients without traditional dental insurance get the care they need and stay out of the emergency room, curtailing some of that opioid cycle as well. And I have Al Olson from the Alexandria area, and he's here with me to explain more. Go ahead, Al.
Welcome to the committee. Mr. Olson, please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you. Al Olson, I'm the CEO, among other things, at Caring Hands Dental Clinic in Alexandria. The clinic serves, as Representative Branson mentioned, a large swath of southwestern, western, and central Minnesota. We have a clinic in Alexandria, and then we serve the rest of the region with our mobile hygiene equipment, including several nursing homes. Being a facility that serves 98% Medicaid on our patient base, and sliding fee scale and veterans and uninsured, watching every dollar is very important to us, down to the penny sometimes. In particular, there's some bills, or I should say there's some rules out there and programs that are causing us financial loss, and worse yet, causing and creating uninsured citizens, one of them being the spend down bill. The spend down program, as a lot of you are probably aware, requires us to provide the dental care. We bill the DHS in a week or so. We get an explanation of benefits back that states, yes, we paid you, or no, we did not. If they do not pay us, we then go and are allowed to charge up to retail collecting from the patient. Most of the patients don't pay us. We offer them a reduced amount. We offer them a monthly payment of anything. I have one gentleman who's been making $5 a month for a few years now. We'll never get paid off, but he's trying. So what happens then is these people owe me money, they have existing treatment, and they don't come back. Now that existing treatment turns into a dental emergency. The dental emergency ends up at the hospital ER, which was one of the reasons we started our clinic in 2006, was to keep people out of the ER and fix them. We can take care of an average dental emergency for between $120 and $160 is what we net out after billing to whatever entity. And the hospital visit is, by the studies I've read, runs between $550 and $900. And that's strictly pharmaceutical care and revolving door. They don't fix it. So just from a cost standpoint, we're roughly, even on the low level of an emergency room, we're about $400 per patient less. You guys can do the numbers, but if you take 10,000 spend-down people that go to the emergency, you're about $4 million that we can save by treating the problem. So it's really, in my mind, of course, would be, it's very simple to see why we need to fix the spend-down program so that the DHS collects it, as was tried last session. We are not a collector. We do not have the funds. We do not have the personnel. And we just aren't good at it. And the biggest problem, again, setting the money aside, is these uninsured people that are ending up at the hospital. That's not what we're about. We want to fix them. And if they owe the state money, we're hoping they still come and see us. And if they come and see us, I can take care of them for a very reasonable amount and eliminate that emergency fee.
Thank you, Mr. Olson, for your testimony. Is there anybody from the audience who'd like to testify on this bill? All right, seeing none, member discussion. Representative Wachler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think the spend down is a problem, and I think Representative Zerwas has a solution, which I think, you know, we need to just get rid of the spend down. It's unfair to people with disabilities and seniors who we expect to go into poverty when we don't expect other populations to do that. And I don't know how you would ever have the decision made about who has to absorb the spend down and how to allocate it across state by DHS. That seems bureaucratically really difficult as well. And I think we all ought to continue to work to eliminate this unfair expectation that people with disabilities and seniors can afford to live on less than the poverty level in order to get their basic medical needs met through medical assistance. And while I'm sympathetic to the problems of the providers, I think the real solution is probably the bigger lift, but a better solution for all the providers, and I hope we can do that. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Loeffler. Other discussion? Seeing no other discussion, final thoughts, Representative Franson.
No, but thanks, Al, for coming down. Al is always advocating for his patients, and his passion is making sure that people have a healthy smile. So thank you for your time, and thanks, Al, for coming down again.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you for coming down, Mr. Olson. We appreciate it. Representative Zerwas. I'm sorry. I believe I did. Representative Zerwas. Oh, okay. All right, 1350 is laid over. House file 225. Representative Zerwas moves House file 225. Representative Zerwas, the bill is before us. Your bill.
Mr. Chairman, members, House file 225 is the MA spend down bill. I know a majority of the members are familiar with this bill, either from the Reform Committee or from previous sessions where we've worked on it. The MA spend down, the goal of House Bill 225 is to change MA policy so that people with disabilities and seniors can keep more of their own income and savings so they can pay their own bills and live as independently as possible. The bill as amended earlier in Reform raises the spend out limit to the poverty level, letting people keep $200 more dollars of the Social Security income every month. 2 years ago, we had success, Mr. Chairman and members, in raising the spend out from 75% to 80% to actually moving the needle. I've had House research draft several amendment options. I'm not going to offer any of those amendments today, but hopefully we can get some more pinpoint fiscal note information on those languages to see some of the variation of looking at that changes in that spend down with my hope, Mr. Chairman and members, at the end of the day to be able to make another move and to continue to move the needle. With this bill, we're talking about the ability to help people that, through life's challenges are in a situation where at the end of the month they can't, they have to decide whether or not they can pay their rent, pay for some basic medical services, if anything's left over, maybe afford some food, and if it's a really great month, maybe be able to go to a movie. That's what we're talking about. A 5% increase on the spend down would equate to roughly $50 more of these folks being able to keep their own Social Security money. It's an expensive bill. It's an expensive ask, but it's the right thing to do on behalf of Minnesotans. With that, Mr. Chair, I know there's people available if there are questions. Otherwise, I can answer questions as well.
All right. Is there anyone from the audience that would like to testify for and against this bill? All right. Seeing none, member questions? Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not really a question, just a brief comment. You know, we have in our packet some letters and with some numbers, and I know you've given some, Representative Zerwas, and, you know, we in this committee, we often talk about poverty level, 120%, 80%, whatever we, and it's all kind of removed from what the reality really is. And so, for example, in Sue Abderholden's letter, she says the, you know, the 2016 poverty level for single person is $11,880 a year or $990 a month. That's 100% of the poverty level. And what we're talking about, what you're talking about in this bill is that if a person has a dollar more than that, they then have to spend, she's saying here, if the person's income were just $12,000, they need to spend $208 a month toward their medical bills. That's, for a person living on that little money, that is just intolerable to be able to get the services they need for their health care and just their basic needs to be met. So, you know, we in Minnesota do a lot better than a lot of places on these kind of things, but my goodness, the reality of this, what a lot of Minnesotans are having to deal with just to get basic needs met is really actually pretty shocking, because even 100% of the poverty level, that's way below what most of us would consider poor. Mm-hmm. So we just, I just thank you very much for championing this cause, Representative Zerwas. I really hope that we can just remember who we're talking about when we make these decisions. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Zerwas.
Mr. Chair and members, Representative Liebling is accurate. It's the federal poverty guideline for a single individual is $990 a month. That means that if your Social Security disability check is $991 or more dollars a month, you need to spend down to $792 a month and try to make ends meet on that, Mr. Chair and members. And that's the 80% level. We were able to move it up to 80% from 75% 2 years ago. I know it's a big bill. It's always a heavy lift. But this is a bill that I've committed on trying to chip away at, and an issue that I've committed to work at for as long as I serve. And so the work continues.
All right. Other questions? Seeing none, with that, House File 225 is laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you, Representative Zerwine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members.
Next up, we have House File 2201, Representative Schumacher. Representative Schumacher moves House File 2201 for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. I don't see any amendments. Representative Schumacher to House File 2201.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 2201 is an appropriation for advanced care planning grants. We were able to do one 2 years ago. That was for about $250,000. And what this is it goes to people and physicians and communities to provide some best practice tools so that people can have the conversation about their end-of-life needs and have the conversations that make their end-of-life more fulfilling and more reasonable for them than where they happen to be today. With me is Karen Peterson. She can describe what that $250,000 went to and why we are asking for $500,000 to be part of the consideration this year. And I'll turn it over to her.
Welcome to the committee, Ms. Peterson. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Karen Peterson. I'm the Executive Director of Honoring Choices Minnesota. As Representative Schumacher indicated, the appropriation that was passed 2 years ago offered an application process to the Department of Health to become the technical advisor for advanced care planning services throughout the state, and Honoring Choices was honored to be selected as that technical advisor. Once we received that appointment, we immediately began by creating an advanced care planning leading committee for the state, collaborating with other organizations and other entities that are already involved in some aspect of this work, because we wanted to be sure we were doing a collaborative effort and not reinventing things that were already being covered by other organizations. The first step that we made was to invite all communities in the entire state by contacting all hospitals, inviting them, and letting them know what this appropriation was going to be used for. We developed a community readiness form, which we invited those communities that were interested to complete. And out of that process, we ended up working with seven communities over the past 16 months. And I believe you have a handout which gives some highlights of what we have done over the last 16 months. The communities that we are working with are Ely, Aiken and Crosby, who are doing a joint effort, Staples, St. Luke's Hospital in Duluth, Northfield, Faribault and Owatonna, who are also working together, and Laverne, Minnesota, where Representative Schumacher is from. Some of the noteworthy outcomes that have happened since we began our work is we have conducted training in five of those communities, and the other two communities, they are scheduled to happen yet this spring. And that training is to provide people the knowledge and certification to be able to sit down with individuals and talk them through the process of thinking about what types of questions they might want to answer as they look forward to potential healthcare decisions that would have to be made as they approach the end of their lives. One of our cornerstones is that we are not the experts. We are the technical advisors. We go into a community. We help a community identify what strengths and resources they already possess and look for the gaps that need to be filled, and then we work together with them to identify the best ways to meet those gaps.
We've held community launching events in several of the communities where hundreds of people have come and indicated through evaluations and surveys afterwards that this is an area that they're very interested in and they consider to be very important. In fact, over 90% of those attending have said when they left they would, in fact, pursue completing a health care directive and doing their own advanced care planning. That the biggest reason people have not done this is they just haven't gotten around to it yet. And so having us work in the communities and work with community partners has given people this little push they need to bring this into their lives. We're currently working with 7 communities. Because each community is unique, they're all at different points in developing a sustainable and ongoing program. So if this appropriation is passed again this year, we will be able to continue that work. And we already have 4 communities that have indicated an interest in joining us next year. And we haven't been advertising that we will be taking on new communities yet, but word is spreading. Community leaders are talking to one another, and there is a waiting list to receive these services. So we're very excited about that.
All right. Questions?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this is really important work, and I think it's important that you're training volunteers, and I think people appreciate having these discussions in settings other than healthcare settings or with insurers or others involved in care decisions, although they are trusted resources for some, but not for all. But the bill says it would be a statewide resource, and yet your first 7, none of them are in the metro where over half the population lives, and I'm wondering if you could address your plans. It is more difficult to find that kind of supportive community partnership if you're looking at all of the city of Minneapolis with its 81 neighborhoods. But those of us who serve Minneapolis would be glad to step up. I suspect those in the suburbs would be glad to as well. And can you tell us about your plans to make this statewide?
Mr. Chair, to that, actually what we're doing with this one is the association is coming from the Twin Cities Medical Association. Originally, so it's already in the metro area and already doing the work there. What this grant money does is allow it to expand to the other parts, and so for the rest of us, we're just picking up where you guys are already at.
Thank you, Mr.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think they need to publicize more because I haven't seen anything about this in my community. Thanks.
All right. Other questions? Representative Haley.
Thank you, Chair. And for the testifier, I'm very much in support of this bill and hope the communities I serve can be part of your next phase. But I'm wondering in the bigger picture if you have any research that shows that this saves health care costs as we try to address rising health care costs for end of life.
Representative Schumacher.
I'll let the testifier.
Thank you, Representative Haley. Yes, there is research that shows this. However, it is one of those things where the efforts that we're putting into place now may not come to fruition and a result may not be seen financially for a number of years. Given that the title of this project is Advanced Care Planning, we're trying to do it in advance. But yes, in communities that have been doing this for longer than we have in Minnesota, there absolutely is a correlation. When people have thought about and talked about with their families and their providers about what kinds of cares they do or do not want at the end of life, health care costs definitely are reduced.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I also think this is a great idea, and this is something, too, that the Affordable Care Act did in a different way, and that was that I believe, if I remember this right, they were going to pay healthcare providers to have the conversations with people, and at that time, the people who were against ACA called it death panels. But I know that's not what this is.
Well, I certainly hope not, Representative Schumacher.
That's not a denial.
No, this is it's a great program. I endorse this program and also makes people think about living wills, end-of-life discussions, things with your family, as parents or yourself and others, also physicians that I've talked to about really putting families through things that they probably wouldn't choose to do again. And thinking about it ahead of time, it makes a lot of sense.
and it's better for people, better for families. So thank you for doing that. With that, Representative Schumacher, House File 2201 is laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you, Ms. Peterson. All right, next up we have House File 2117. Representative Pearson moves House File 2117 for possible inclusion. Representative Pearson, to your bill.
Good afternoon, Chair Dean and members of the committee. House File 2117 is an appropriation bill for the Minnesota State Council on Disability for Administration, and it covers their administration and operating expenses. Rather than me rambling on and on, I'll let our testifiers take over and give a full explanation of what the funds are used for.
All right, Mr. Simmons, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Joan Wilshire. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota State Council on Disability. The council has been around for over 44 years and really working quite resourcefully and as a technical resource for legislators, state agencies, and the public on issues of disability policy and accessibility. A budget request for this biennium is an effort to continue that programming, but it also addresses structural needs that we have deferred in order to continue doing our good funding programming of our work. We are requesting funds for basic remodeling to improve the accessibility of our office, as well as for replacing office furniture. The duct tape has got to go. The rest of our budget request is dedicated to staffing, and I want to just kind of go over the four positions quickly with you. The first position is our digital access coordinator. The labor contracts currently dictate that the temporary employee who we have in this position who handles our digital accessibility work must now be made permanent or be eliminated from our base. So we prefer, of course, to keep him permanently, and that's reflected in this request. We have also included a request for a document remediation specialist. Our digital accessibility specialist time is increasingly consumed by offering technical consultation to state vendors and outside entities. And so added support is needed to focus solely on reviewing existing documents and websites to ensure that they are accessible. Also included is a succession pro plan for our access specialist. This individual is the only occupant of her job classification in the entire state and is vital to the operation of our agency. No other employee in the state has worked at this intersection of the ADA, State Building Code, and Minnesota Human Rights Act. The final position I want to highlight is that of our ADA coordinator. Last year, in partnership with Department of Labor Industry, Ms. Scott received a one-time appropriation to conduct outreach to small business owners around ADA compliance. We have partnered with Chambers of Commerce around the state, from Austin, Minnesota to Duluth, Minnesota, to educate businesses about their obligations under the ADA, and it's going great. Communities around the state are hurting still, and they need more of this education awareness. Many business owners in these areas can't afford to bring in an expensive accessibility consultant. So it's important that we continue to provide these entities with free technical guidance to help protect them from the predatory lawsuits that have been going on these last 2 years. It's equally important that we make communities accessible so people with disabilities can, of course, as we hear so much in here, can live integrated lives in the community of their choice, and that's for seniors as well as people with disabilities. So we ask that you add the ADA coordinator to our base as well. So this concludes my piece here, and now I'm going to introduce Nancy Fitzsimmons. She's Dr. Nancy Fitzsimmons. She is one of our council members, and she's going to speak a little bit to our council.
Thank you, Ms. Bouchard. Welcome to the committee, Dr. Fitzsimmons. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Chairman Dean and committee members, thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today in support of House File 2117, appropriating funding for the Minnesota State Council on Disability. I should tell you, I do have, I'll do this a little abbreviated. I do have it in writing for you because I know there is time, a time-pressing issue. But I should tell you that I was not asked to come to speak here today. I just happened to be scrolling through. I pay attention to what this committee does. And I just happened to be scrolling, and I saw the bill, and I put my name forward. And then I alerted Joan that I had put my name forward, and I asked her, and to let her know. So this is not an organization asking me to come, but I chose to come and travel from Mankato on my own. My name is Nancy Fitzsimmons. I'm a professor of social work at Minnesota State University in Mankato and council member representative representing Region 9. I believe the work done by the staff of the Minnesota State Council on Disability is vital, not only for people with disabilities, but for all Minnesotans. When I joined the council 2.5 years ago, I quickly realized how fortunate I was to be affiliated with such a dynamic organization with an unbelievably hardworking, dedicated staff. At quarterly council meetings, staff continually impress us with the amount of work they are able to do with a very limited budget and a small team. Particularly impressive is the high level of collaboration and engagement that MSCOT has with other state agencies. ADA accessibility consultation is one of the two main components of our work. The thing about accessibility is that people often do not think about access until it directly affects them. When I saw President George H.W. Bush being pushed in his wheelchair onto the football field at the recent Super Bowl, I wondered if he ever imagined that one day he would benefit from the bill that he signed into law, the Americans with Disabilities Act. I first learned of the importance of accessibility around the time that the ADA was signed into law. I worked as a respite care worker, a direct support worker, by the way, which we talked about quite a bit today, for two families who had children with disabilities. Every outing into public spaces was an adventure because we never knew what access barriers we would encounter. I personally learned how challenging it was maneuvering with two people in a small bathroom stall with a wheelchair was almost next to impossible. And I will tell you that I told Brianna to hang on tight because there were times when I was so afraid that one or the other of us was going to fall. And falling in a small step, a bathroom stall with a motorized wheelchair, I mean, there's nothing good that's going to come out of that. With the MSCOT budget request, the state agency that provides consultation on accessibility will finally be housed in a space that is truly accessible to its own employees and to all visitors. The request for additional staff, including making the ADA coordinator position permanent, will ensure that MSCOT can educate and provide technical assistance on issues of accessibility in every corner of the state. Disability is a fact of life. 1 in 5 people have a disability. A disability can be acquired at any time during one's life. Disability increases with age, and the population of Minnesota is aging. The work of MSCOT may benefit someone you love and may one day benefit you. I urge you to support MSCOT's appropriation request. It is a small but vital public organization in our state, worthy of the investment of public dollars in recognition for the great work already done, but more importantly, for the important work yet to do on behalf of people with disabilities, their families, and all Minnesotans. Thank you for your time and opportunity to testify before you today.
Thank you for your testimony. We do appreciate you being here and traveling all the way from Mankato. Appreciate that. Is there any other folks from the audience that would like to testify on the behalf of this bill? Seeing none, member questions. Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and this group certainly deserves to have its needs met, and I'm hoping that we can creatively look to the budget. I mean, maybe we can assess all the other state agencies like this AG's office does, if necessary, to support their consultation with other state agencies to make sure that their communications are accessible, and explore whether the committee that has labor and industry would be willing to step up to the position that they funded in the past, because I think all of these are critical needs in terms of opening the doors of opportunities to others, and I'd be willing to join you in talking to some other committee chairs if we need to help make sure that they're able to continue these supports.
All right, other questions? All right, seeing none,
Final thoughts, Representative Pearson?
Nothing I could add. Really, Ms. Fitzsimmons' testimony, but bringing it back to the personal is really what it's all about. So thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for all the work that you do, Ms. Forshire and Ms. Fitzsimmons, on behalf of disabled Minnesotans. With that, House File 2117 is laid over for possible inclusion. Next up, we have House File 1561, Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll move House File 1561. I believe to be held over for possible inclusion. There are no amendments.
All right. Representative, to your bill.
What this bill does, it includes mental health to be eligible for telemedicine and increases from 3 to 10 telemedicine services per enrollee per calendar week. That's the bill. I stand for questions.
All right. Questions? Representative Hamilton, could you just, what do we currently do for telehealth with mental health? Is there any differences in reimbursement or anything else that we currently do?
So, well, first of all, Mr. Chairman, I was trying to get us back on track. And okay. I appreciated no questions, but since you are the chair, we will respond. Mr. Chairman.
I get one question today.
Right. I would like to have my testifier chime in.
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair members. My name is Jenny Palin. I'm with the Minnesota Association of Community Mental Health Programs. And to your question, Mr. Chair, to my understanding, there is no difference in the rate that is paid for telemedicine for mental health visits. Our concern is that the current Telemedicine Act limits the number of encounters that a person can receive telemedicine to 3 per patient per calendar week, and this is across the entire healthcare system. And so we are simply looking to increase that cap up to 10 per patient per week.
All right. So that the increase is not in the rate, it is in the number of visits.
That is correct, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you for the clarification. Other questions? Final thoughts, Representative Hamilton.
Thank you. I ask for your support.
With that, Representative Hamilton, House File 1561 is laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you to the testifier for sticking around. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee.
All right. Representative Backer.
Chair members, I'll move House File 1166.
All right, Chair. Representative Backer moves House File 1166 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Health and Human Services Omnibus Bill. There's no amendments. Representative Backer, to your bill.
Sure, I'll be brief. House File 1166 directs DHS to do a comprehensive study on how payment rates are set for outpatient service with MA. The current rate program is variable throughout the state of Minnesota, so this study will include on ways to make it better, more efficient, and we use statewide dollars better as our outcome. And with that, Julie Marquardt. Ms. Marquardt will share a brief testimony.
Welcome to the committee, Ms. Marquardt. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Julie Marquardt. I'm with the Department of Human Services, and I don't have much to add other than this is a study that I think, as we have seen over the past several years, we get a lot of requests to make add-ons to our current fee schedules, which usually is a symptom that your fee schedules are out of date or something is not working with them. And so this is an opportunity to look more broadly across all the categories of service and make sure that we've got the right rates for the right services and that they make sense together and the rates hang together relative to one another.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Marquardt. Questions? Seeing none, does anyone? Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So just I might have just answered my own question. I was going to say, it looks like, when you look at the bill, it looks like this is something the commissioner could just do. I mean, you know, conduct an analysis of rate-setting methodology, and then I looked at the front page of this fiscal note, and there's nothing on there. Oh, yeah, there is something on there. There's $227,000. So I guess that's the answer, that the commissioner feels that there's some money needed to be able to do this, I guess. Otherwise, I mean, maybe could you just explain real quickly, like, where that money is, how that money is going to be used.
Ms. Marquardt?
Yes, Mr. Chair. The money is used to procure a vendor who has expertise in the multiple different methods for rate setting for the outpatient rates, because you're looking at everything from potentially facility rates to pay hospitals, clinics, to mental health rates, to physician rates, to chiropractic, to some alternative acupuncture, things like that. So in the past, similar to what we did with our inpatient rebasing, to have bring in experts who have expertise and help the department lay out and look and make recommendations.
Okay. All right, Mr. Chair, thank you.
All right, other questions? Does anyone else want to testify on behalf of 1166? Seeing none, 1166 is held over for possible inclusion in this bill. Thank you, Representative Backer, Ms. Marquardt. All right, members, appreciate the patience with all of the extra folks today. If we had it to do over again, I would probably want to do extra time for both of those bills, but we did have people from outside I wanted to accommodate. So I apologize for rushing through some of the other bills, and for thank you for the patience and those members who agreed to have their bills heard later. With that, members, we are adjourned.